sing. When you're ready, we'll hear from you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Satnam Singh, representing the petitioner Adolfo and Bracamontes in this case. This immigration case involves two petitions for review of the BIA's decisions. I respectfully ask this Honorable Court to clarify the plain, clear, and unambiguous language of the statute, that is 212H, and rule that the BIA's interpretation of the statute is contrary to the plain language of the statute, and the BIA erred in not remanding Rendon's application for CAT relief to the immigration judge, and that the BIA erred in denying the petitioner's motion to reconsider and stay of removal. Primarily, the issue in this case is the petitioner's eligibility for 212H waiver, and particularly the language which bars certain LPRs from the waiver. INA section 212H, 8 U.S.C. 1182H, in that particular sentence, which is the main issue in this, says, no waiver shall be granted under this subsection in the case of an alien who has previously been admitted to the United States as an alien lawfully admitted for permanent residence, if either since the date of such admission, etc. So basically here, the term admitted has been used two times. And the first term of admitted, which we have argued in our brief, refers to the admission under INA section 101A13A. And that language has been ruled by three circuit courts to be plain and unambiguous. And as a result of that, Chevron deference was
not. That's sort of curious. You know, they use the word admitted in the same statute in two different ways, or in a context where if you applied it would lead to some absurdities is in the statute. I mean, someone is admitted sometimes refers to as a status and sometimes as at entry. Section 13 says entry at the border, whereas 20 suggests a status. I'm not sure you can make the statement or that a court can accurately conclude that that's not ambiguous. This I think is actually a linguistic mess, and the whole statute is filled with inadmissibility, missibility, admitted and non-admitted, and uses it regularly throughout in a confusing manner. And to conclude that previously admitted as an alien lawfully admitted, to suggest that that has two different meanings that conflict with each other and resolve this case, I think it's pretty ambiguous.
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Make your case then.
the first term admitted refers to 101A13A. If it had meant to encompass admission as a permanent resident, then that first admission was not needed there. That is the controlling phrase here. Admitted as previously been admitted to the United States as an alien lawfully admitted for permanent residence. I think it bifurcates two admissions. The first admission refers to 101A13A, and the second one refers to 101A20. That is creation of the record as a permanent resident.
Well, 13 and... Go ahead.
That's because they are admitted lawfully admitted for permanent residence are two separate defined terms.
That is correct, Your Honor. And this issue has been considered at length in Martinez versus Mukasey, as well as in Sum versus Holder, and Lanier Court went as far as saying that if it is not an admission under 101A13 as an LPR, then that bar doesn't apply. But we are not arguing that that fact pattern does not apply on Rendon's case. I don't see any ambiguity in this. If it was meant to be admission as a lawful permanent resident, then the statute could have said so. And as a matter of fact, we have referred in our brief, Your Honor, that issue was noticed by the Congress, and there was an attempt to amend the IRA-IRA in 1997, the Immigration Technical Amendments Act. And there was a proposal that 101A13A definition should include adjustment of status admission as well. But that act was never passed. So it shows that Congress knew what they were doing. When they used the term admitted two times, they wanted to clarify the first admitted term refers to 101A13A admission, and the second one refers to creation of permanent resident record. The second one may also be 101A13A if a person has presented himself with the immigration visa package at the port of entry.
Has Congress taken any action or done anything following the Fifth Circuit's decision in Martinez?
Congress has not done anything. The bill has been introduced in the Senate by Senator Menendez, and something will be done in future. But as of this date, we do not have any clarification or any amendment. So one attempt, I'm sorry.
The Martinez case essentially seems to track your argument in terms of this interpretation, that this is pretty plain and sets forth the definitions of it. And I'm just wondering if Congress had wanted to do something different, if they had in fact taken some actions, but you say that actions are potentially being taken, which of course doesn't affect the decision at this point, but it does tell us as to whether they feel this was already in there.
As I said, Your Honor, in 1997, an attempt was made. It was included in the proposed technical amendments bill, but that bill was never passed. So it means the Congress was aware of this bifurcation.
What were they trying to do in 97?
They wanted to include in the term admission, the creation of permanent resident status as well.
I see.
Which is our position, that it bifurcates LPRs into two categories. Mm-hmm. One is who had a lawful admission under 101A13, and the others are entered as an LPR under 101A13, or in case, as this court has ruled in Aremu, if somebody does not have any 101A13A entry, then adjustment of status could be considered to be an admission to avoid the absurd results.
So the 1997 legislation that did not pass would have effectively merged the definitions in 13A and 20 together for purposes of subsection H.
That is correct, Your Honor. We submit again, the plain language of the statute at 212H is clear and unambiguous, particularly as it relates to the category of LPRs who were admitted once prior to adjustment of status under INA Section 101A13. This is the holding of all the three circuits. If the court rules otherwise, this will be the first circuit to rule that there is only one category of LPRs who are barred.
Well, I guess the question I was exploring with you, I do find the language confusing, and but I've also looked throughout the statute. I mean, how it uses the word renders somebody inadmissible and admitted. It refers regularly. The word admitted is used as a status and as entry at the border. And that ambiguity is not clarified in my judgment, especially when you say admitted as a lawful alien. Does that mean he has to be a lawful alien, permanent alien, before he comes in and the inspector notes it, or does the inspector, who has no power to do it, to admit somebody as a lawful alien, or can he be admitted with the intent that he's going to become a lawful alien? But if you find ambiguity, then there may be a Chevron problem. And your argument is there's no Chevron issue, deference, because you think it's clear.
Your Honor,
statutorily clear.
I believe it is statutorily very clear. When the term admitted is used by itself, it essentially and categorically refers to 101A13. But if admitted is followed by certain other words, like they have done here in 212H, an alien lawfully admitted for permanent residence, it refers to 101A20. So previously been admitted is very, very clear. It's not ambiguous because it is defined in 101A definitions, what admission and admitted is. That says at the port of entry, a person has to present themselves and they have to be inspected and admitted. That is the definition in 101A.
Well, that's a 13 definition.
Right.
But then you go to 20, and yes, it takes the very same word and says admitted means a status.
That is correct. But it also follows by the word admitted for permanent residence. So that is a sub-classification of that, but it does not equate that as a...
It necessarily defines admitted differently, though.
Right. As I said before, the text of 212H is divisible into two distinct phrases, the alien who has previously been admitted to the U.S. and an alien lawfully admitted for permanent residence. The first phrase is controlling in this. In other words, the application of BAR turns on what it means to have previously been admitted to the U.S., as the Your Honor has already pointed. So the first sentence is more important than the following sentence. And the first sentence has no qualifier. So that essentially refers to 101A13. The statute defines admission in general as the lawful entry of an alien into the U.S. after inspection and authorization by an immigration officer. This is the definition in 101A13A. And also...
And if you commit a crime after you're in the country, you're rendered inadmissible.
That is correct, Your Honor. And once you are, but you are rendered inadmissible only if you leave the country and you come back. Otherwise, you become deportable.
I understand, but inadmissible in that context means a status. You're no longer here lawfully.
That is not correct, Your Honor. Being inadmissible does not mean that you are not lawfully here. That status does not change until you leave the country.
You mean you can be deported? How can you be deported if you're lawfully here?
There are certain crimes for which you cannot be deported. For instance,
but if the statute says you commit an aggravated felony,
right,
you become inadmissible.
Right.
Renders your status inadmissible. You can be deported. And you're not lawfully here.
The deportation ground is separate than inadmissibility ground. Inadmissibility ground triggers only if you are seeking admission into the U.S. or you are applying for a new status like Rendon did. At the time when you are applying for readjustment of status, you have to overcome all the grounds of inadmissibility. And 212H provides a waiver along with the new adjustment of status application. So unless Rendon took this step voluntarily because he wanted to fix his status, his green card had expired after 10 years, and he applied for a new green card, and that wasn't issued. That's when he consulted the lawyers, and they said that, yes, there is a provision, particularly under Martinez versus Mukasey and several unpublished decisions from the BIA, because BIA has not issued a single precedent decision in the same fact pattern. Majority of the decisions that government has quoted, as well as that I have seen, are the ones who involve a person who entered without inspection and then committed aggravated felony after adjustment of status. So that is what the case of Koljenevic is, and Aliaji, and all of these cases are not similar to this. Martinez versus Mukasey is the first case in which the courts went into this issue that a person who has committed aggravated felony, but they have a previous admission, whether the 212H bar applies on them or not.
Of course, and it doesn't end, even if you win here today, it doesn't end this matter for you. I mean, it's not the end of this war.
No, Your Honor, it is still
the discretion of decision.
Discretion, yeah.
Yeah.
We still have to have the discretionary factors which will be considered. It's going to be a remand, basically, if we prevail.
You're going to do that based on the fact he's got two little kids here.
Four kids, Your Honor, according to the definition of... he has a U.S. citizen wife and four U.S. citizen children.
No, I understand. Okay, I see your time's up. We'll hear from you on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Glazer.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Sherry Glazer appearing on behalf of the United States Attorney General. Your Honors, the instant case demonstrates the complexity of immigration law. When this court examines Section 212H of the Immigration and Nationality Act in light of the entire act, this court will see that the correct interpretation, the interpretation that makes the most sense, is that taken by the board, that Mr. Bracamontes is ineligible to apply for a 212H waiver as he was lawfully admitted for permanent residence through the adjustment process, and he was subsequently convicted of an aggravated felony.
So your position, the government's position, would be that Martinez and the other related cases are simply wrong.
Correct. The court in Martinez and Lanier, in Martinez specifically, it looked at the language to 212H and found that the bar on 212H eligibility is limited to aliens who entered the United States as lawful permanent residents. And in reaching that holding, the Fifth Circuit held that the language lawfully admitted for permanent residence is separate and distinct from the term admitted, but the Supreme Court has held that words in a statute...
Does the government ask for certiorari in any of these other cases?
Ask for... No, not to my knowledge, no. And the Supreme Court has held that words in a statute are given precise content by the neighboring phrases with which they associate, and these two phrases are not separate and distinct, and when this court also looks to the INA as a whole, the Supreme Court has also held that acts of Congress should not be read as...
But if admitted and whatever the other one is, admitted as a lawful president or lawful permanent resident aren't distinct, why would the Congress have set out two separate statutory definitions?
Well, with this court, if this court looks to Section 245, which is the section of the INA that governs adjustment of status, the court will see that Congress has directed that an alien, whether the alien enters without inspection or whether the alien has a previous admission or was paroled into this country, that the alien achieves an admission on the date that the adjustment application is approved. In Section 245I, which deals with aliens who've been admitted or paroled, in Section 245J, L and M, deals with aliens who have been admitted under specific visas, such as an alien who's a victim of trafficking. When Congress has directed that as of the date that the Attorney General approves those aliens' application for admission...
You're saying in 245, the statute uses the word admitted.
Correct.
In connection with change of status and not entry at a border.
Correct. For aliens who have a previous admission, the language is clear in saying that when an alien who has a previous admission, when that alien's adjustment application is approved, that as of the date that it's approved, the Attorney General shall record that alien's lawful admission for permanent residence. Similar language is in 245 when dealing with aliens who entered without inspection. And that's where the error in the Fifth Circuit and the Eleventh Circuit, the cases come in. They didn't look at the statute as a whole and really just looked at these isolated provisions. And when the court looks at the statute as a whole, the court will see that these specific consequences that these aliens achieve in an admission upon adjustment is what's directed by Congress. And, you know, I'd like to point out my opposing counsel talked about the Ninth Circuit case, Sum versus Holder. It's the government's position that Sum versus Holder is completely irrelevant to this case. In Sum versus Holder, the Ninth Circuit held the plain language of admission refers to a procedurally regular admission and not a substantively lawful admission. The alien in that case, his concealed criminal activity at the time of admission, the court held, did not change the fact that when he entered this country, that it was in the status of a lawful permanent resident. But the Ninth Circuit never reconciled the language in 212H as the issue is in the instant case. And I'd like to point out that the language that's in 245 reveals itself throughout the rest of the Immigration and Nationality Act. It repeats itself. When referring adjusting status to that of a lawful permanent resident, that Congress has directed that these aliens achieve an adjustment. The same language is in Section 209B, dealing with the adjustment of a refugee, that if an alien has been admitted as a refugee under Section 207 of the Act and meets certain requirements and has not yet acquired permanent resident status, that alien, even though that alien has been admitted and is in this country, shall be inspected and examined for adjustment, and if that alien meets certain requirements, shall be regarded as lawfully admitted to the United States as of the date of that alien's arrival into the United States. Similar language is in 1255B, in 249, in 210A2, in 240A(b)(1), dealing with cancellation of removal. And Mr. Bracamontes, my opposing counsel's argument, doesn't fit into the statutory scheme in the same way. If we bifurcate aliens, depending on the procedural mechanism by which that alien achieved its adjustment, as I said, it violates canons of statutory interpretation, and it frustrates congressional intent. As we point out in our brief, Congress wanted congruity between eligibility for a Section 212H waiver and cancellation of removal under 240A. And the government's interpretation provides that congruity, whereas my opposing counsel's argument does not. And, for example, under the government's argument, these are both discretionary forms of relief for lawful permanent residents, and under the government's interpretation, a lawful permanent resident, no matter how that alien adjusted, if that alien subsequently commits an aggravated felony, is ineligible for both forms of relief. And same with the residency requirement. In congressional intent, specific language is the manager's intent that the provisions governing continuous residence set forth in INA 240A as enacted by this legislation shall be applied as well for purposes of a 212H waiver. And under the government's interpretation, if we treat adjustment as an admission that invokes the 7-year residency requirement when a lawful permanent resident is ineligible for cancellation of removal for not meeting the residence requirement, that alien will also be ineligible for a 212H waiver. And the opposite cannot be said of my opposing counsel's argument. And the other results that the government explained in its brief, where there was the former equal protection problem.
Well, how do you explain the definitions in 13 and 20? Are they inconsistent with each other? Or?
No, I don't think they're inconsistent. The board has even said that treating an adjustment as an admission does not fit into the definition set out in 101A13A. And I think, and the government argues that the language in 212H, that when we look at 245 and these other statutes that I've pointed out, that if an alien has a previous admission, that adjustment is still an admission. And the language in 245 is simply saying that the admission that, not in 245, I'm sorry, in 212H, is that the admission that the language is referring to is the admission through adjustment. Whether that alien, you know, adjusted when that alien, you know, came through the border as an LPR, or whether that alien entered without inspection and subsequently adjusted, or whether that alien entered on a visa and subsequently adjusted, no matter what the situation is, that alien achieves an admission, and that's the admission that the language in 212H is referring to.
Anything further?
No, that's all.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Singh. Why don't you address her arguments about 245 and the other references?
Your Honor, 245 is exclusively a statute which is devoted to adjustment of status. 245 is adjustment of status.
Well, I know it is, and that's what he did here.
And it
says to be recorded as an admission.
Adjustment of status can never be an admission under 101A13 because that is the attempt which was made in 1997 through the Technical Amendments Act, which was never passed.
Except it says it explicitly in 245.
That is the term that will...
as an admission.
It says you will record it as an admission. It is equivalent to admission, but it is not admission or admitted under 101A13. When an adjustment of status is granted to someone, then they are obligated under 245I to record his admission as a permanent resident, which is 101A20. It is not saying that you should record his admission as if equivalent to at the port of entry. No, it says admission as a permanent resident, and we have no problem with that. That is what 101A20 says. And the second thing my opposing counsel said is that some versus Holder is not applicable in this case, Your Honor. In some versus Holder, the court specifically mentioned in the opinion that in this regard, we interpret the term admitted as used in Section 212H as distinct from the term lawfully admitted as that phrase is defined by the statute. Because some was admitted as an LPR at the port of entry, so he was barred, although because it was ruled that he's barred by 212H. LPR bar because his only admission was at the port of entry under 101A13. So if, and similarly, the refugee provisions are not applicable at all in 101A13. And lastly, the counsel mentioned that Congress intended cancellation and removal to be equivalent to 212H, which is not correct because these are two separate reliefs. A cancellation removal is a one-time relief that is available to LPRs, and the attempt to the conference report that the council mentioned has a specific language about the seven-year physical residence only, and that is already included because 212H has seven-year residence requirement, so has the cancellation removal. But it doesn't mean that they wanted to equate everything else with 212H. These are two separate and distinct reliefs. And in 212H, seven-year physical presence is cut off on the issuance of NTA, not by the commission of crime. So that is still a difference. They are not same. And this is already Congress noticed it, and Congress passed the law. In cancellation removal, seven-year physical presence stops on the date of the commission of the crime. But in 212H, it does not stop until NTA is issued. Sometimes NTAs are issued maybe 5-10 years after the crime. In Rendon's case, crime was committed in 1999, and NTA was issued in 2009. So his physical presence under 212H will never stop, although he already had accumulated 20 years of physical presence. Similarly, cancellation removal relief is available only once in a lifetime. And even after getting 212H, you can still apply for cancellation. And 212H can be applied in different ways. It can be standalone waiver at the port of entry. It can be along with adjustment of status, and it can be applied more than once. Similarly, there is no need to have a qualifying relative for cancellation or removal for an LPR, whereas in 212H, qualifying relative is a must. So there are several differences between cancellation removal. The only thing that Congress wanted to equate was the 7 years of physical presence, and which was already enacted. Apart from this, Your Honor, we request the court to also review the denial of remand. Primarily, if this issue is resolved, then that issue becomes moot. But in case court rules against us, then the two remaining issues are that the board did abuse its discretion and also violated due process rights of Rendon by not remanding the matter for cat protection to the immigration judge, and they applied a wrong standard of motion to reopen on motion to remand. Motion to remand is nowhere mentioned in the regulations or the statute, but as I mentioned in my briefs, it is clearly mentioned in some of the case law as well as the immigration judge bench book, which was violated by applying the motion to reopen standard on denial of Rendon's motion for remand. And similarly, a stay was denied in this case, and we could not file it with the Fourth Circuit because Rendon was arrested in Virginia Beach, then taken to Richmond, from there to Stafford to Manassas, and then to York. So by the time I could track, he was already deported within 3 weeks. Apart from this, Your Honor, we asked the court to carefully consider the three decisions, which are Martinez versus Mukasey is a very detailed decision. It has addressed all the issues raised today about two categories of LPRs and why the first term admitted is exclusively referring to 101A13, and the second one is referring to 101A20, and also Sum versus Holder. And recently, in February this year, even board has acknowledged in a case of Aliaji that there are definitely two categories of LPRs for 212H relief. And in footnote 4 of Aliaji decision, the BIA specifically recognized that the Fifth Circuit has looked at 101A13 as definite authority when construing, and stated that adjustment of status satisfies the has previously been admitted requirement of Section 212H, at least where such adjustment was the alien's only admission. So this case was after Rendon's case was decided, and I believe that is a dispositive position, and it's a
Fifth Circuit?
No, Your Honor, it's a BIA's case.
BIA, oh, I see.
Yes.
Okay, I see your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll adjourn court for the day, and we'll come down and greet counsel.
Thank you.
This honorable court stands adjourned until tomorrow morning at 9:30. God save the United States and this honorable court.